from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 278, recorded live Thursday, August 4th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Scott Hunter about the direction of ASP, the recent Azure Web Reorg, and the future of open source at Microsoft.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today on the show, my boss, another Scott. Of course, we all know that at Microsoft, your ability to move up in the company is tied directly to whether or not your name is Scott. In fact, this is not Scott Guthrie. This is Scott Hunter, one of the 1,500 Scots that work at the company. How's it going, sir?
Yeah, are you going to call out that we're the lesser Scots?
Oh, yes. This is a very good point. When we are in meetings, when there are many, many Scots, particularly when Scott Guthrie or the Goo is present, some of our friends, particularly Kira Richardson, has taken it to calling Scott Hunter and Scott Hanselman the lesser Scots. So we are collectively the lesser. Scott's the lesser.
Yes, indeed. thanks for having me on the show, Scott.
Yeah, no worries. So let's get right to some of the confusion that's going on. So rumors are Guthrie has left the building, abandoned the web group, and moved over to Azure. And that's confusing and scary sounding. What has really happened, and where are we? Because I work for you, and you work for Goo. Where's our group, and how did this work out?
Yeah, so it really is not as much of a change as people would expect. So when Scott moved into the new Azure Application Platform team, he brought a bunch of sub-teams of Microsoft with him. So, for example, one of those teams was the team that Scott Hanselman and I are on, which is formerly called the Web Platform and Tools team. That makes up Visual Web Developer, parts of Visual Studio, ASP.NET, Web Matrix, IIS. So that group moves in with Scott. We also were able to move some other groups in with Scott as well, such as the Workflow team and the WCF team. And in a lot of ways, I think that'll be a benefit to all of our customers because before we were kind of in different groups, meaning that a lot of things that the WCF team does in some ways look very close if you squint to what the ASP.NET team does. And having us together in one team is going to allow us to do a lot more collaboration than we've done in the past. And so I think we can do some good convergence on those two technologies and make the experience much cleaner for our customers. I should also point out that as part of this new Azure Application Platform team, we also brought in the people in Microsoft that work on the portal for Azure. So if you create an Azure account, this team works on that experience, the experience of billing, the experience of creating a Azure SQL account. Any kind of portally part of Azure has kind of been brought in as well. And the App Fabric team, which provides a bunch of the services that are available on the Azure platform for customers. That could be things like caching, that could be things like Service Bus, and a variety of other technologies, such as storage and stuff like that. And so all these teams come under Scott, and the reason they're all under Scott in this new org is because everything that I kind of listed, if you think about it, could be used if you're building cloud applications. So in some way, we're the cloud application platform team now, trying to optimize on developer experience for customers that want to host their applications in the cloud.
Okay. Let me try to do a little translation, because sometimes when we talk to Microsoft people, even people that are kind of down to earth like myself and yourself, we get into kind of Microsoft speak, marketing speak, and stuff like that. So I really want to break it down for the developer who's listening. When you say he moved a couple of groups, this is like hundreds of people though, right?
Yeah, this I think the combined team is over 600 people.
Okay.
So
because it's an easy thing to say, oh yeah, we moved a couple people or we moved a couple of groups. But really, what's happened, from my perspective, and tell me if I'm right, because I get the memos and I talk to Scott, but this is still just, we're all kind of getting our brains around this. All web development stuff is in one place now. Like before, Azure was Azure and web platform was web platform. But now any angle bracket generation is in one place. Is that right?
Yes. And I would say even more than that, though. I mean, you know, you just mentioned like IIS and ASP.NET, any web development. But, you know, also web development is if you create a RESTful endpoint with WCF. You know, that's something that's even though that they consider themselves the, you know, a different, what does WCF stand for? Windows Communication Foundation, I think.
See, even you don't know.
Anything like that, you know, anything that's accessible via the web, you're right, is part of this new org. And, you know, I also can quell people's, you know, thoughts on, you know, is Scott going to be like less involved with ASP.NET? I was on vacation the last 2 days and, Scott at the spur of a moment had, Phil and Elon as, Phil Hack, and Elon Lipton from the team here, come over and present to Scott, you know, how's the next version of MVC coming along and what are we working on? And, just 2 days before that, he had met with Damian Edwards from our team who works on some of the web form stuff and, wanted to see some videos of what we're doing with web forms. So, you know, his involvement with .NET is to me the same as it was before. Just maybe more focused now because it's purely the web stuff.
So he has more stuff to do. He's like his job is bigger. The scope of his job is bigger, but it's almost like they've expanded web development to include, you know, both hosted and cloud all in one Scott Goo organization.
Yeah.
Okay. And like you said, not just ASP.NET, but like I've always thought before I worked at Microsoft that our story around what I would call kind of web applications, like real enterprise-y big web applications, like your, you know, your Dells or your banks and stuff like that, almost was treated differently. Like there's ASP.NET applications and then there's like big complicated multi-tier stuff. And before there was like this app fabric, this Windows Server app fabric group that had things like Velocity, which is the caching and workflow and long-running workflow and the kinds of complicated applications that you see behind the firewall, you know, inside of a big company. And that was another whole org itself as well at Microsoft.
Right. And that org is now part of this new bigger business unit as well, providing those same services in the cloud. And there's a variety of things there. If you want to store files in the cloud, you know, they've got a service for that. As you mentioned, they've got caching. If you want to do caching in the cloud, they have all these mechanisms that there's a component of that called Service Bus. And I'm not super familiar with it, but I know the general premise of that is I'm one of those big enterprise-y customers like Dell that you just mentioned, and I've got all my sensitive data in my servers sitting behind the firewall, but I want to run a website outside the firewall, and I want to somehow proxy my data back and forth in a secure manner through the firewall boundaries, and that's what the service bus service is. And I think you'll find that as we grow, you'll see more services, you know, land on this app fabric. I could easily see us having a notification service that works across tablets, desktops, phones, for example. Mm-hmm. Variety of things we could offer in the cloud.
So ASP.NET, IIS, Azure, App Fabric, and then you also said briefly Windows Communication Foundation. And we know that Glenn Block has been doing a lot of work with that group, trying to get a REST services kind of thing working. So that's kind of all ASP.NET and WCF almost are kind of merging. You know, in an organizational sense, at least.
They're not merging, but they're a lot closer than they were before. Before both of those teams were in totally different business units, and they kind of had their own agendas. Mm-hmm. And the benefit to me of having everybody in the same business unit is now we'll have a shared agenda. Examples of how we can help our customers there is today. If you want to use, you know, Glenn Block is a great example. You know, he's working on something called Web API right now. But Web API kind of stands on its own. What if I'm building an MVC application? Do I do my RESTful services in MVC or do I do Web API? And having our two teams a lot closer together is going to let us rationalize that and hopefully provide the customer with a smoother experience as well, where they're not going, when do I do A versus when do I do B? You know, what if we had a similar way of writing RESTful services across both WCF and ASP.NET? Well, then we help everybody. If you're an MVC guy, you write in the same pattern that the Web API guy is going, and vice versa. So those are areas where we plan to collaborate on in the future and hopefully, you know, as I said, bring the products closer together.
And like in the past, that's kind of a good example of how Microsoft being so big has been difficult. I mean, I remember a year ago or even longer than a year ago, talking to people over in the WCF team saying, gosh, I wish that this stuff fit better into the ASP.NET world. And, you know, there's two different ways to make, you know, two different ways to make REST services, three different ways to make REST services. And then I felt the same thing about App Fabric, that, you know, this is interesting, but now there's half a dozen different ways to make session state. Scott likes his things tidy. I mean, is he almost kind of like defragmenting the entire story and making it tidy?
I think in the long run, that's what we're going to see is, you know, I can already tell you he's been asking us, hey, how can we make Web API and ASP.NET not look so different? How can we make them closer? How can we make, you know, as you said, one of Scott's big focuses is, you know, not telling the customer, hey, here's 12 ways to shoot yourself in the foot. Let's give them one prescribed way of doing things.
Yeah.
You started seeing us going down that path in .NET 4 and with MVC 3 where, there's, you know, Microsoft's got a ton of data stories. We've got, you know, Link to SQL, Entity Framework, ADO.NET. But, you know, by default in the box with MVC 3, we put one in, which was Entity Framework code first. Hopefully that means if you're a new customer on our platform, you don't play the guessing game of which do I use and why. And I think you'll continue to see that process go through other things like Web API, for example, you know, the one we're just talking about. Solve that same rationalization where, wow, there's two ways to do it. Which way should I do it and why would I do it that way and when would I do it that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's feedback I think, you know, you've probably heard from our customers as well, Scott, that, you know, Microsoft doesn't tell us what we should be using, and there's lots of choices.
So speaking of the choices, though, there's two competing things, and I've talked to you about this because I'm kind of one of the primary guys that goes out in the community and talks to people and brings back feedback. But there's a group in the community that wants prescriptions. They want to say, just tell me the right way to do this. Tell me the way that'll be supported, that won't shoot me in the foot, that my company won't regret in some number of years. And then there's the other group that says, it's great that you're prescribing this, but I really would rather have the ability to use this injection framework or that test framework. So there are people who want to buy their Legos and follow the kit, and then there are the people who want to, bring in Legos from outside. And I know I've been pushing this Lego thing pretty hard lately.
Yeah, we definitely want to support both of those. I mean, a great example of that to me was, Steve Sanderson from our team. If anybody knows him, he worked on the scaffolding support that we added in MVC3.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we added that scaffolding support and it was only MVC scaffolding support, there's nothing preventing you from using that same scaffolding work on web forms, for example. And so while we offer something with a prescriptive model, we do have all the hooks, hopefully, that you can plug whatever you want in. MVC3 is, I think, a great example again is, you know, if you want to plug the scaffolding with some other scaffolding, so we have scaffolding built in the box. So if you are building an MVC application and have a data model, we can easily have it build some pages for you that give you a generic experience, you know, against your data model, which you could then go and customize. And by default, that uses what we ship in the box. But all the hooks are already there that if you want, you can go download Steve Sanderson's standalone package on NuGet and plug it in, basically replacing the one that we actually have in the box. With his implementation. You know, on top of that, in the future, you'll be able to actually plug in, for example, a web form scaffolding. While we are prescriptive, we're all about choice as well. But we know that, as you said, those are two different customers. If you're a brand new customer, you probably want prescriptive. If you're a hardcore developer that's been using the platform for 5-10 years, you know, you probably want to roll your own or use whatever things you're comfortable with. And we want to support both of those models of development.
Stack Overflow Dev Days, the universe's best conference series by coders for coders, is back. This fall, bigger and better than ever. I've personally been involved in selecting the speakers for the San Francisco show, and it's going to be fantastic. Now, Stack Overflow Dev Days is a fast-paced, two-day conference. You're going to learn the latest new technologies you might not be using. DVCSs, Node.js, F#. And by learning, we mean that the speakers are actually coding, not just rambling on about ROI and doing PowerPoint slides. After 2 days at Stack Overflow Dev Days, you will leave with solid knowledge about the ins and outs of these technologies. You're going to see awesome speakers like John Skeet, Mark Gravel, Rory Blythe, Rob Connery, Paul Iris, Scott Chacon, and of course, Joel Spolsky. And even members of the Stack Exchange dev team will be speaking at these events. They're going to give you the inside scoop on all the awesome that makes up Stack Overflow. To top it off, you'll enjoy lots of networking opportunities with your fellow programmers, and you'll really get to put a human face to that gravatar. Experience it all at Stack Overflow Dev Days. It's a ridiculously inexpensive price. And as a Hansel Minutes listener, you get 25% off using the discount code Hansel Minutes on the registration page. Check it out now at devdays.stackoverflow.com. How many times do we get pushback on stuff like that? Like, I think it's obvious, and we always push that, and I think that that's spread out to all of ASP.NET and IIS, and hopefully we'll spread that kind of attitude to all the other orgs underneath Scott, you know. I mean, Scott helps set the tone, I help set the tone, you and Phil, we all are very like-minded, but we aren't all of Microsoft, though. You know, how many times are we going to get pushback?
We've gotten pushback before. There's an area of pushback I'm not even going to bring up, that there's a classic example of pushback, but there is that pushback. But I think what's kind of going on is, you know, why our team started making these changes kind of goes back to about 2 years ago when we were comparing ASP.NET against some of our competition, which includes things like PHP, Ruby on Rails. We're looking at how does our platform compare to these things. And one of the things that is interesting is, you know, if you use Ruby by default, there's a data story built in. If you use PHP, there's a bunch of examples that are built in. Now, PHP is a little bit closer to us because there's some overlap there as well. But one of the common themes when we started looking at our platform versus some of our competitor platforms was, you know, our tools had kind of got complicated, and, you know, our frameworks had started to get kind of complicated. And we went through a whole process of building something which was called, it was codenamed Plan 9 for a while. And it eventually shipped earlier this year as web pages with Razor syntax. That same Razor syntax is, you know, available for MVC as well. And part of that whole process of building that new product that was trying to compete better against some of our competition was trying to teach the whole team that we had gotten complicated and we were giving developers so many choices that the developer was confused. And so over the last year and a half, we kind of trained our whole team that let's look for, you know, ways to make a developer productive. Let's look at adding features that are features. They're not demos. You know, a lot of, you know, I'm sure we've been accused of building features that are only good for demos, but when you start trying to use them in the real world, they fall apart. So, you know, try to stay away from building demo features and building real world features, focusing on simplicity. Make them very easy to use. You know, I think you coined the term around this, Scott, developer happiness?
Mm-hmm. Well, I stole it
and,
from Ruby.
You know, I think that theme has been emanating from us, and I know it's been spread to other teams as well, including the WCF team, you know, knowing that we got to make our stuff easier for people to use and pick up. And I think that, as that washes through the company, will help this, you know, having this prescriptive solution versus, hey, here's 35 ways to shoot yourself in the foot.
So what about us building stuff that already exists? I know that that's like a big point of contention with the community. The idea that, now I realize, I personally don't think it's necessarily reasonable to say like, oh, we're going to build a logger. Why don't you just use Log4Net? I mean, there's lots of issues around who owns it, how is there support with it? Does it do this? Does it do that? But for the most part, every time we build something new that's a Lego piece, somebody says, why didn't you use foo.net? Because foo.net does that already. The biggest example is Entity Framework and in Hibernate, but smaller examples come up as well. When do we want to use community stuff and not build something like, and how would we, they always say, throw your support behind. You know, what do you think that means and how do we do that? And will we do that?
I think you see us doing that more and more, you know, over time. I mean, that obviously the best example of this is, you know, 5 years ago, we wrote something called the Microsoft Ajax Library, and it was basically, you know, a bunch of the team sitting in a room going, "Hey, what kind of tools would a JavaScript developer want?" And pretty much anything that was thrown into that library, you know, existed in another library called jQuery, and you know, now we're shipping jQuery in the box, and we're slowly cutting the ties to Microsoft Ajax. Each release of one of our products probably has less Microsoft Ajax in it and more jQuery in it And maybe at some point in the future, we'll be all jQuery and no Microsoft Ajax. I think what you're talking about is something that is happening in the company as well. You know, you've seen it with our products. We ship Modernizer, we ship jQuery UI, we ship jQuery. There's a good chance in the future that we're going to be shipping jQuery Mobile. You know, for the most part, we try to find things. You know, now I would say our first choice is to go look and see, is there something out there that actually meets the needs and solves the scenarios 100%? If there is, I think there's a good chance we'll try to use it. We've been much more successful. You know, all those libraries I just told you, we've been pretty successful shipping those things in the box, even with Visual Studio. So I think it's getting easier for us to do that. And the other thing is, you know, everybody out there in the world probably thinks, oh, Microsoft's got, you know, thousands of people, and you know, the ASP.NET team is probably some huge team building these web strategies. And the reality is, over the whole last 10 years that we've been doing ASP.NET, it's not a very big team. I mean, most people would be shocked to find out that we only have about 10 or 11 devs. We've got 4 or 5 PMs, and a handful of 10 or 12 testers that make up the core ASP.NET team. So if you add all that together, I think it's going to be 30 or 40, 50 people, something like that. But it's not going to be the hundreds or thousands or what people would expect. And so, you know, I love trying to embrace some of the stuff that's out there from the standpoint that why would I spend time with my limited resources rebuilding what's already there? So if we find some good stuff out there, and especially if our customers tell us about it, I think that would be the most important thing. It'd be fun for you to run some kind of thing on your blog or Twitter and ask people, you know, what libraries that are out there do people think are common enough across all web development that we should include them in the box. You know, at the same time, this is kind of a tangent on what you said, we're also doing something else. Historically, when we add new features to ASP.NET or we add new features to .NET, we do that in the core platform, the core .NET framework. That core .NET framework only ships every, you know, 2 to 3 years, or at least it's been historically doing that. I don't know if that's going to change in the future, but for the past couple of years, every 2 or 3 years, we ship a new version of the .NET framework. That's a long time for us to have to sit on a new feature before we can actually give it to our customers. And so, you know, with the introduction of NuGet earlier this year, that's kind of a new way for us to add features. And so I can already say for the next version of the .NET framework, about a month or two ago, we had some really cool features. One of these is having ASP.NET providers that support at the Azure environment,
mm-hmm.
Azure SQL, SQL Compact databases, and our plan was to actually ship those in the box as part of .NET. We also have some work that we've demoed a few times this year called web optimization, where we can do some combining of JS and CSS files, some compression and stuff like that on those files. And originally, we were going to put those features into the next version of the .NET framework. But right before one of the milestones, we're like, why are we putting these things in the framework? That means we can only rev them every 3 years. And so what you're going to see us do is we'll probably start building more features in as NuGet packages. And then what we'll do is we'll change the templates in ASP.NET. So when you say file new project, we'll just pre-install some of these NuGets into your application. The benefit for the customer is, we're no longer tied to that 3-year cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You get upgradeability but using the package manager. So we think it's a much better experience. That same mechanism, I think, also will allow us to include more third-party stuff with new releases and not requiring us, once again, to wait for framework releases and all that kind of stuff. We could, maybe next April, we could just say, hey, here's the ASP.NET 2012 release. And all that really is a bunch of new project templates that get injected into Visual Studio, and those new project templates just install a bunch of pre-installed NuGets into your project.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to work on you know, trying to not duplicate work that's out there in the community, and I think we're going to try to not add features to the core framework as much as we've had in the past. I mean, obviously some things, you know, infrastructure, like if you want to support some of the new async stuff that we've been demoing for the last year or so, that has to be in the core framework. But we're now asking ourselves the question, does it have to be in the core framework? And if it doesn't, then we use NuGet. NuGet is also the same mechanism that we're shipping some of these third-party libraries as part of projects as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll see us continue to do that. So we'll both grab new libraries from the community and add features via NuGet. And as I said, I think it'd be a great exercise for you to sit there and say, hey, is there some library out there that most of our customers think we should have in the product?
Okay, maybe a use of user voice to do the voting on that.
Yeah, just to see what, you know, the only thing that we tend to try to do is when we do make a choice like that, we want something that's going to have broad adoption.
Right.
So we want something that's going to affect a lot of our customers. If we think it's only going to affect 5 or 10% of our customers, then go install the NuGet yourself.
So in doing stuff like that, I went, I spoke at a conference yesterday that was at Intel and showed a bunch of stuff in NuGet. And one of the big concerns that people said, and I think it might be because I was at a large corporation, were that, well, you know, my company XYZ doesn't want anyone to do open source, or we only have these licenses or these things. You know, how do we, as we move towards open source, get other companies that aren't even considering open source projects to think about open source?
Well, I think one of those things is by us shipping the things in the box, we're solving some of those problems for people, because if we're shipping it in the box, that means we're typically are shipping it with a license that is probably amenable to the customer. A lot of corporations are afraid of open source because, you know, let's say company A has a patent and they start shipping an open source library that is very similar to the technology they have patented.
Mm-hmm.
By them shipping that technology, that open source library, they actually basically potentially lose the rights to their patent. And so that's one of the areas that you see companies being afraid to use some open source, that, hey, we might lose some of our own intellectual property, the rights to some of our own intellectual properties by embracing this.
Hmm.
So, you know, one thing we do is we typically relicense some of these open source libraries that we ship with a license that protects us. So that's one thing. Another thing is, you know, Any library that we ship as part of Visual Studio or part of an MVC release or an ASP.NET release is also backed up by our support staff. So, you know, if one of our customers has a problem with jQuery and wants to pick up the phone and call our support service and ask about a problem with jQuery, we'll help them with jQuery. So, I think anything that we're shipping, because it's part of our umbrella, you're getting the Microsoft support policy to go with it. And I think those are two things that that definitely help some of those, other companies out there.
Right. We've had groups inside Microsoft that have said, I don't want to use this product because we don't think jQuery is allowed, even though it is.
That's correct. So I was going to say that the next thing I was going to lead to is, you know, we've had many teams inside of Microsoft come to us and say, hey, we want to use jQuery or we want to use jQuery UI. Right. And, you know, and we're told we're not allowed to do that. And that's slowly changing as well. If you aren't a Microsoft employee inside of Microsoft, our legal site now has a whole section on shipping OSS software with your software, with a bunch of guidelines and stuff on how to what the processes are. You know, before when I joined Microsoft, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, there was no process. Basically, you had to go talk to a lawyer, at the office and convince them that it would be safe for us to ship, one of those libraries. And now, because it's becoming more and more prevalent, all that guidance and stuff is already on the internal website here.
Mm-hmm.
Employee can go there, read the rules on what they have to do to ship something. And as I said, the main thing that Microsoft's worried about is just making sure it doesn't lose any of its rights to its own intellectual property as part of you using one of those libraries. And as long as we can resolve that, then, you're free to use them.
So how long do you think it will take for Scott to defragment the whole thing?
I think it'll happen pretty fast. I think that under the same roof as everybody else in this new Azure application platform team, I'm going to guess you'll see lots of changes over the next. This might sound like a long time frame, but I think over the next year.
Yeah.
You know, the reality is, even though we moved under that new name a month or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just right now, are we actually figuring out what that means? And so, it's going to take us a little bit of time just to work through that. But I think, maybe by this time next year, we'll have resolved a lot of that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like, I mean, I've heard Scott give, he's been starting to give, he's sending out vision documents and vision PowerPoints and talking to people. And, you know, people know Scott, right? And they trust him because he's got some common sense. And he very much seems to have an attitude of like, hey, here's how this should work. Here's how this should work. He sits down and explains it. And, you know, as with almost all these kind of organizational things, it really is organizational stuff that's kind of holding us back. You know, if it could be said that anything is holding us back, in my experience, what I know about our groups, it's almost never talent. It's almost always communication and organizational stuff. Tidying up the organization can make it just easier, whether it be where people sit in the building, literally, or what meetings they're in, or what goal and what target that they're aiming at. And that's something that's, you know, not to kiss Scott's butt or anything, but that's something that he's really good at doing.
Yeah, I agree. As you said, I think hopefully as part of these reorganizations that we'll take all the, you know, those teams and make them very close to each other. You know, for example, right now, the WCF team, for example, used to be in a different organization than us, meaning that their organization had their goals. The organization we were in, DevDiv, had its goals, and those goals always did not align 100%. And, you know, now being under the same organization, you know, we will make all those things, you know, align the same way. And, you know, we'll also move all those teams closer together. I mean, right now, you know, the WCF team is in building 18. We're in building 42. For people that have never seen our campus, you can't really just tell by the distance and numbers how far somebody away is. But the reality is they're a good 6-7 blocks away, which means, you know, the only time you see those people is if you schedule something where you're actually in their building or vice versa. And I think in this new org, we'll all be hopefully in the same building and they'll just be walking down the hall. So, you know, that's why I think it's a great move by Scott to put all these different technologies that are web-facing, you know, in one org.
Cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me today, boss. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.